What, in your words, does a magical talisman do exactly?
What doesn't it do is also a question. We're all talismans, after all, of a precise moment. I would say that a word that's used a lot for talismans is a vessel, you know? Mm-hmm. I think it's a little more than that. So usually when people create and use a talisman, you might have heard the word talisman somewhere. It's that you create an object at a specific time to be ensouled by a spirit, a deity, and that you can then carry it around. Some people view it purely as like charging something, an object. I would say it's a little more complicated. Christopher Warnock, whom I've learned astrological magic from, it's more like, it's like a house, a little portable temple, I would say. So to answer the question more briefly, it's a little portable house for your little friend that is the spirit, and what it will do depends on what spirit it is. And so greatly on your intention. If it's a Venus talisman, it's, you know, more for love. If it's your, like I have like a christening, like a baptism sort of medal, it's the one I have is for the Virgin Mary. So it really depends, but that's the basic definition, yeah.
What is important to you about the distinction or the additional complexity, as you put it, of of thinking of a, or not thinking necessarily, but relating to a talisman as a house for a spirit, as opposed to charging a material with, I don't know, energy or whatever the charging people say it is? Like, what is the difference between those things, and why is it important to you to make the distinction?
I would say that it's more of a relational thing, because so when I talk about a talisman or with clients, I do a lot of planetary mediation. We talk about, you know, like setting up an altar, for example, to talk with the spirit. And I talk about a lot as if it's a friend, you know, you're meeting with a friend. And so it's the difference between, do you use your friends or do you talk to your friends? You know, if you charge, you know, like sometimes you're going to see, oh, I'm charging my amethyst with like a full moon. I'm not opposed to that in principle. You know, it's not strictly like, oh, you should do this in this certain way, but not that. It's more so, I think you will benefit more from your relationship to a talisman if you see it as a relationship with a little guy that's in its little house, I would say.
There's something about magic in general, I think, is pinpointed very, very cleanly by what you're saying. And something that I think holds people back a lot of the time, which is the confusion, I guess you might call it, of self and other in, like, in causal space, for lack of a better word. Like, is it me, or is it the divine? Is this all in my own head or world, or is this coming from outside? And I think that confusion can come up in all kinds of places and in all kinds of ways in spiritual practice. It almost sounds like you're saying a talisman serves, among other things, as a physical, concrete object to demonstrate the like other side of the exchange, like the other person or being that's on the other side. Does that resonate? Does the idea that like a talisman has a reminding function or like a drawing you out function resonate with you?
Yes. I would say it is in a way bearing witness to what we do, because this idea of something being relational, it's not a concept I invented, and it's not, it's very ancient. And I would say, it became way more clear to me, when I started, you know, researching my own roots and questioning my own, you know, spiritual heritage, and also researching and connecting with more indigenous understandings of like how we relate to a space. So when I lived in Australia, you know, I was kind of shocked by the way that people seem to just not care about what Indigenous Australians had to say about the land they lived on. But something that was very, very interesting and a concept that stuck with me is that Indigenous Australians did not understand the land as something you owned, but as something you are the custodian of. And in a way, it might seem like not really connected, like, okay, but what do objects have to do, you know, what does a pendant have to do with land? But in fact, it's very much connected. And yeah, I really relate to that in a way. And so back to this concept of bearing witness, that the talisman space forces us into, in a way. Creating a talisman or talismanic objects, it requires great effort when you read. So I practice astrological magic specifically, which is a kind of magic, a kind of creating magically installed objects, talismans. But in all talismanic practices, you see a way of assembling very different things together in the service of a spirit, of an idea. And so it's this concept of becoming aware of the things that are around you and becoming aware of the way they're connected. Like, oh, why is Jupiter purple? It's tied to Lapis, it's tied to the law, it's tied to great things. And making a conscious effort to put all of this in one place is very central to the concept of a talisman and of respecting and showing your awareness of that.
It sounds like maybe a person's relationship with inhabiting or habitation in general is implicated here. I'm interested in the thing that you said about the different relationship to land from, let's just to oversimplify it, like people who are indigenous to that land and people who are not. You know, I think that that's a very complicated word or concept, and that maybe even every culture sort of has a different way of inhabiting a place. And so the word may not even really refer to anything that's like coherent across cultures, but clearly, especially in a place where there are different groups of people with a different relationship to the land, there's like a continuum of like more or less of an inhabitation and an inhabiting of the place. And you also earlier said something about do you use your friends, or are you friends with your friends? Like that seems like the same idea, right? Like some people inhabit a land and understand its colors and its species and its like the rocks that, you know, what they're made of and how the place was literally formed. And that is part of their relationship to the place where they live, and other people live on top of a land and extract its value as a sort of transaction or conversion. And those are completely different ways of being. And so I'm really interested in how you, and it sounds like it's Warnock's tradition, describe a talisman as a place that is inhabited. Do you think that you can, let me ask it this way. What are the responsibilities of the wearer of a talisman to take care of and be a custodian of the place that they are now responsible for?
Well, following that, you know, friends metaphor, how well do you know your friends? is my question. And a lot of the, I would say, the talismanic tradition that respect is, it's a lot about divination and also knowing, asking the deity what it prefers and what it wants from you. If I make a Venus talisman, Venus might want like chocolate from someone else, but she might want cute little swan sculptures from me. And so it's to say, it's my friend's birthday very, very soon. And I know what she would want and what she would not want. And maybe, oh, let's do this activity together. For a talisman, in a way, I would say it's a lot of the same. How do you create a relationship with it? How do you familiarize yourself with the talisman? How do you pay respect? Some people, you know, they'll go as far as saying, don't wear the talisman in certain places or doing certain activities. Like, I think Christopher Chastrologic, mm-hmm. I think it's pronounced. Mm-hmm. He does say, he does recommend not to wear your talisman when going to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm. It's a very Jewish teaching.
Yeah, I was thinking of that. So I was, you know, I was looking for examples. I was like, yeah, this is very Jewish. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. You can't study Torah in the bathroom either.
Yeah, that's so funny. Yeah, I feel like it also, what the talisman does or doesn't want you to do, how it wants you to pay respect to it, it will largely depend on like the spirit of the talisman, how it's disposed. For example, I think it's Shuli Rose who said that the Pleiades are like notoriously flighty. When you make a Pleiades talisman, they kind of like to run away. Some talismans, in my experience, they like to be shown. Others, they don't really like that. Like if you read the Picatrix, for example, like the number of talismans where he's like, don't show this to anybody. Uh-huh. But, you know, in my experience, like if I'm wearing a sun talisman or if I'm making a sun ritual, like I made one like 10 days ago and the sun was like, do not stop talking about it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think it's about building that intimate relationship to a spirit. And that's also on their terms, you know, because it's already on our terms that we know, like, oh, do I have time to build an altar today? Do I have time to pray? But that's our own agency. And on the other side, making space for the agency of that spirit is also primordial, I would say.
It feels like there is a great deal of spiritual training, for lack of a better, like, succinct way of describing it, behind your practice, that it was obviously learned in preparation for the practice, but also seems to be constantly building on the job, because every time you're doing one of these workings, it seems like they have something new to teach you about themselves or, you know, the objects or what they're for or whatever. It strikes me that this kind of training might be required of your customers as well. That like there are a lot of people in the world we're in where this kind of magic is available to people often give a lot of warnings about proper use of talismans. Like Christopher's example of not wearing them in the bathroom is like a fairly tame one, I would say, compared to what people are sometimes warning about. I wonder, and this also reminds me of these things you're saying about like having a real relationship with a being versus like using it for something, and like the using it carelessly or like just for your own purposes is hurtful to the being. And I'm also thinking about how the objects that you in particular make are very, very beautiful aesthetically. And so the temptation, I imagine, arises in people to buy these objects because they're gorgeous and maybe like not quite for the proper reason, or with the right intention, or like maybe just unaware of what's going to happen when you put it on. My question after all of that is like, in what ways do you prepare people for these workings when you offer them?
That's so funny because I recently saw some friends who are, you know, totally not in that space at all, but who saw, I think they actually saw the Alfika talismans I made recently, just a necklace, the picture of the necklace on my website. And I'm like, oh my God, I want to buy one. Can you send the link? And I was like, beware. Well, I think, so it's funny because the way, it's very rare, actually. This never happened. So I almost was like speechless because it, you know, like this so rarely happens that I had almost not prepared, because the way that it's so niche, you know, what I do, that the way that most people find it is that they're usually familiar with my spiritual and astrological work beforehand and have some familiarity with like the writing and the teaching that's out there already. Even if they don't know all of the intricacies, they come across what I make first through what I say about it and the effects and things like that. And so I would say it's like, it's information that's, it's simply, I think it's really hard to, or like even borderline impossible to purchase something without seeing the extensive warning and like writing I do. But the way I would say I frame it is like, aside from the very, you know, like effects are unpredictable and explaining how it works and things like that, I think it's also a lot of prep work on my end of, you know, I very, very regularly do cleansings and sort of like protective things so that what I make and what I create may go to the people it's intended for. And also, it's not the same kinds of warning, again, depending on like what I offer. Like, I will not warn people the same whether it's a Mars talisman or if it's, you know, a Venus or an Alpha one, you know, which are very like sweet and cooperative. But again, I've had pretty intense like Venus sessions, you know, like Venus is not to be fucked with, I would say. So, yeah, I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, well, I think it adds something interesting, which is that like you take some responsibility for that with people, because clearly, even though they're probably finding you through your existing work and are aware of sort of the seriousness of what they're committing to, they can't possibly know as much as, or, you know, except for when like our friends buy everything you make because they're like on a talisman bender, like they can't possibly, you still, even in that case, I don't think would expect them to fully understand the working that you've done. So you sort of make your choices for what you're going to make with this in mind. Is that
definitely true? And yeah, and I also like divine extensively, and in a way, like I like the way that you're talking about this in terms of taking responsibility, because it's very true. I remember one of the most intense, I think, workings I ever did was like prior to the Mars Kazemi and Scorpio collection I made, as one does. I like, for a month, every day I would, you know, pray to Mars and ask that, you know, for protection, for grounding, that this would go in the right hands and all of that. But yeah, I think there is, you know, with great powers come great responsibilities, or something like that. So yeah, I would say there's definitely that element of, again, when you introduce one person to another, you do take responsibility for that in a way. You're like, you're a fully consenting person who's an adult, you know, but you also know that, you know, it's my responsibility for introducing this person to your life, and so there comes great nuance but also responsibility with that. Definitely.
How are you contacted by the next spirit that you're going to work with to create a talisman? Like, what, like where and when and how are you given the task to do the next one?
Loudly. Well, I think there's a couple things. There's a very material practical aspect to it, which is that, you know, I'm primarily an election astrologer as well. So I'm going to be looking for interesting dates and looking for interesting alignments and all of that. But I think it's through reading and, you know, writing. I'm always kind of rereading sources because you find like little hidden gems in that. And I feel like there's always something that strikes you. And what I love about doing astrological magic is that it's where I get the sort of the loudest omens. There's really something loud, and maybe it's because I'm ruled by Mars, but I would say that the way it usually goes is that maybe I'm going to find an interesting alignment, but like the next one, if it's not, oh, in terms of calendars, like that's interesting, I will simply, usually it's, I'll see, for example, I don't know, oh, an interesting Sirius election, it looks good. And then I'm literally going to step outside and there will be like dogs walking around, which is associated with Sirius. Or I'm going to, I don't know, like see like juniper berries. I'm going to get all of these omens. I'm going to like, okay, I hear you. I hear loud and clear. I see you. And when this is the usual way of things that I'm getting omens, I've never gotten negative divination for creating things, for like maybe getting a talisman or using something myself. I would get negative divination, but when it's, I feel called to doing something, it's like when you feel called to do a ritual, you know, it's very much like they came to get me.